It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at the 9 o'clock hour, Mike McAvoy, the CEO of The Onion, is going to join us, talk about how they make political comedy when the candidates make it themselves. How do you do that? It's got to make it much tougher. We'll also talk about their transition as they move from newspaper to digital, and we'll also talk about the new. They actually have a new food vertical. Kevin Pang is going to be holding that. Was actually announced today. Wow. So we will talk with Mike McAvoy at the Onion coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, my guest tonight at the big table has gone from Top Chef to Top Chef. Stephanie Izard is the award-winning chef of restaurants Girl and the Goat, Little Goat, and just this year Duck Duck Goat. Chef Izard is no stranger to the Chicago culinary scene. Before setting up in the West Loop, she worked in several Chicago restaurants, including her own Scylla in Bucktown, 2004. But that was before she was a contestant for the fourth season of Bravo's Top Chef, and she became the first female to win the reality show. She's taken that success to the Chicago dining scene, but also worldwide with books, tours, television appearances. This year, Stephanie celebrated her sixth anniversary for Girl and the Goat, and she created the first annual Fulton Market Harvest Fest, which will be on October 2nd. And Fulton Market, where Duck Duck Goat resides. And she joins me tonight on the big table. Stephanie, good to see you.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Let me just start with this. 6 years, Girl and the Goat.
6 years. We had a big party. Well, we just had a big party on Monday, belated, to celebrate. But yeah, I was just actually talking about this morning. I was meeting with some folks from a hotel group that are trying to like revitalize their employees. And I was talking about, I have one employee, Gary. Well, there's a lot who have been there since the beginning, but Gary, one of my servers in particular, he still goes to every table and every guest that he meets. It's like his first table ever. And it's just amazing to have somebody like so, such amazing people in our family and that still can get so excited about being at work every day.
Well, I mean, there's that old restaurant adage of like, if you, you know, most restaurants don't make it 5 years. That's, it's a tough business. It is. For you, is it special to be able to celebrate the sixth anniversary, especially for a restaurant, Girl and the Goat, that has a tremendous amount of competition as the West Loop builds around it?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, it's kind of one of those humps that you want to get over. And we've been really lucky. The West Loop has been really great to us. And every time a new restaurant opens, we do have that moment of panic, like, oh, crap, what's going to happen? But all it's doing is bringing more people to the West Loop in general. And I think all the restaurants are benefiting from it. And people are doing restaurant hopping or, hey, let's have a drink there while we wait for dinner here. And I think it's just be, you know, become a group and there's great camaraderie. And so it's really awesome to be part of.
You came in what, 2000? What would it feel, 2010?
Whatever 6 years yes, ago
I,
was,
I just had to do math don't in my head. Me. That's always bad in live radio. But in 2010, I mean, it really was a different type of neighborhood. I mean, there were restaurants before you. There was a surge with Marché and Red Light and the restaurants that sort of defined that this was a restaurant row. But it wasn't until Girl and the Goat came in that you really started to see this almost this culinary explosion. Take us back to 2010. What was it about the West Loop and about Girl and the Goat that really attracted you to the area?
My partners and I spent a year looking for a restaurant space. I think people, after I got off of Top Chef, it literally took us a year to find a space. And people are like, when are you going to open? When are you going to open? Not realizing what goes into picking the right location. I'm one of those people that when I go into a store, I buy a shirt, I just get to the register and they're like, it's $100. I'm like, oh crap. All right, I guess I'll take it. But I don't really think about things sometimes. But my partners very much do, you know, think about the neighborhood, think about who lives in the neighborhood. How are people going to get to the restaurant? And when they took me to what is now Girl and the Goat, they said, have an open mind, Stephanie. I know it's a little more downtown than you wanted, and it's near the highway. And they were saying all the positives. And as soon as we walked into the space, I just felt that it was right.
What was it? What was there before?
It was two spaces, and we actually knocked down the middle wall. But it was an old grocer. I mean, the whole area, if you look at it, we have some old pictures around. I think it was an old grocer, and like where Little Goat is was like an old like flower shop. And the whole neighborhood was what is the meatpacking district, but mm-hmm. along with some places that, you know, people just walked into.
This is
shocked.
At Randolph and Halsted in the West Loop, the heart of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For cool. I mean, and at what point did you realize that this was not only going to be the home for you and for restaurants to come, but the idea that this would be sort of a mecca for the culinary scene here in Chicago?
Yeah, I think, you know, and I have to say Paul Kahn, he was there with Publican before we got there. So I can't take, you know, just finding that neighborhood to us. But I think between the two of us, we kind of just showed that restaurants can be successful there. And it is right by the highway. It makes it easy to get to. It is like a cool, you can just walk over the bridge from work and go there for lunch. I think we showed it's a great success. And now restaurants see that and they want to come in. And I think it's always, you know, important to say for them, you can't just come into a neighborhood and just, you know, let's just open the doors and right. go for it. But we've been lucky to be surrounded by some really strong restaurateurs. So I think it's just makes the neighborhood look better and It's great.
There's been, you know, there's been a lot of restaurants that people don't even think about that have come and gone in that area in the last 10 years. But what is it about the restaurant scene there that keeps restaurants thriving? Is it picking the right restaurateurs to open restaurants in that area?
I think so. You know, it's you can have some really strong restaurants. If you're going to come into a neighborhood that has, you know, like has Publican, has Us, has now Siena Tavern, has Nelco, has just great restaurants that exist already, you can't just come in and half-ass it. You know, like, you have to come in and bring it and, like, make a strong restaurant. So I think it's that little level of, like, friendly competition that brings in restaurants that really want to push to do well. And people that come to that neighborhood are expecting, they're like, yeah, I've been going to Publican for years and it's so awesome. I expect all the other restaurants around here to be great too.
For you, I mean, you know, Lil Goat opened a couple of years after that, and now Duck Duck Goat, which has a to-go window, which is, we'll talk about that. But I mean, you've developed this own community, your own Stephanie Izard community of your restaurants. So how does it feel for you to have so much imprint in that one area with the three restaurants?
It's really fun. I spend my whole day like walking from restaurant to restaurant. It was really funny when I was pregnant a few months ago, just waddling from restaurant to restaurant. But I'll see my staff members from the different restaurants, like my pastry chef and I, Nate, who runs all three restaurants. We're just passing each other on the street.
That's
going
how it works.
And checking out different things.
Jump to different restaurants.
Yeah,
restaurant,
and you just see people wearing goat shirts everywhere. So it's fun. It's kind of like a little goat village or something.
Do you put a timer on it? Are you like, how do you do it? How do you?
I mean, sometimes I race people. But yeah, I realize that. It's it takes a little longer to walk to Duck Duck Goat now. It's a little further than Little Goat was. And so I was like, I need to start spending like a day here, a day there, a day there, so I can really like just focus and get things done, because especially when the weather gets cold, I'm not going to want to be trekking around the neighborhood.
Is there one of the restaurants that you find yourself in more than the others? Not putting in the other ones down, but is there one that you're like...
Which is your favorite child? Rough. I try to divide my time evenly. You know, it depends. It's each one. Little Goat has a test kitchen upstairs, so I have that space to do like my cookbook and things like that. So I do meetings up there and such. Duck Duck Goat, I definitely, you know, while pregnant and getting back, it's the baby, you know, it's the youngest one. So, and with the takeout window, I've been spending my time a lot there. But you don't want any of the restaurants to feel like you don't love them just as much as the others.
Stephanie Izard, my guest tonight in studio. She has created the Fulton Market Harvest Fest. We'll talk about that. It's coming up on October 2nd at Fulton Market. This is something. This is an addition to the work that you do with the restaurants. We'll continue our conversation here at the Big Table. We'll take a quick break. Stephanie Izard here in studio. Stay with us. My guest in studio tonight, Stephanie Izard, chef and the woman behind Girl and the Goat, Little Goat, Duck Duck Goat, all the goats in Chicago she's got covered, the award-winning, James Beard award-winning chef. And it's amazing to me because you have been able to not only have an award-winning restaurant, but you've been able to branch out and continue to build. And you'll see that with restaurant groups, and you obviously Boca and your partners have been behind that. But the idea of you being able to branch out and start new restaurants, was that the plan?
It wasn't originally the plan. I think there was actually, after we opened for 1 month at Girl and the Goat, we were downstairs in the basement. We had our bread baker over to the side making a huge mess. I was in the butcher area on this little table that I took over every day to make all these specials. And I was like, it's just too crowded here. We need to open another restaurant. And we were just envisioning this like awesome bakery with maybe 12 seats and just a tiny little place called Little Goat. How cute is that? And we talked about it all the time. Brought it up to my partners. It took a couple years into it to open it. And then that space opened up and it ended up being the supersized goat. But I think we just started to realize that we had created more than just a couple of restaurants, that we'd created a brand that we just really got behind. And the goat on our – oh, I'm wearing my Duck Duck Goat t-shirt and there's not a goat right here, but I always point on my shirt. The goat that we have itself is a brand, and I think it's fun to try to – we dress them up for t-shirts. We dress them up for events. We just really love the idea when we think of new restaurant ideas, and I still have other ones in my head. I just sent my partners an email the other day. I was like, oh, I have a new idea.
I have six
more
ideas.
They're like, chill out. You just had a baby. But it's really fun, and it always is like, what kind of goat can we make next?
What do you think? What does the goat represent? What's the brand represent when we think of Little Goat, Girl and the Goat, Duck Duck Goat?
I think it represents being able to have great food, great service, but having fun. I think whenever somebody comes to Girl on the Goat, even I don't see it as a, you know, a super high end. You don't have to get dressed up to come there. You can come in a t-shirt, or if you want to get dressed up, whatever. But the first question we always ask is, did you have fun? It's not how was the food, how was the service, which we always take more pride, I think, or take the most pride in our service because our staff's amazing. But it's just, did you have fun? And we want it to be, you know, it's loud in there and, you know, not everybody likes that, but it's a good time.
For you, what got you into food? I mean, what was it about food that attracted you? I mean, thinking back now after three restaurants and all the work that you've done from books and everything, I mean, what was the first sort of thought about getting into food?
It's funny, and I don't mean this to be a sad answer, but it's funny that you asked that today because it's my mom who passed away a few years ago's birthday today. And she was an amazing cook. And she got my sister and I in the kitchen with her when we were little. We used to make mushu pork together. The mandarin pancakes that are on the menu at Duck Duck Goat today are my mom's recipe. And so she just got us into cooking. She grew up, I think her mom was a terrible cook, and so she was like the type of person that just like learned to cook because her mom was a terrible cook. But we cook things from all over the world. We grew up like pulling out cookbooks on Sundays and flipping through and finding things we wanted to cook and going through her little recipe files together. So I was really lucky that way.
For you, when did you get serious about it? I mean, is there a point where you're like, okay, this is going to be a career for me? This is not just me and having fun with my family on a Sunday.
I was at University of Michigan, which I don't know how I got in there, but I was having too much fun going to all the football games and frat parties and whatever I was doing. And so I didn't get into the business school, which was the initial plan. I wanted to like wear Victoria's Secret suits and work in an office. This was my
that was
and
bland.
Sit. We were talking about I could never sit all day. I don't know how that would have gone. But that didn't work out. And my dad, my sophomore year, I was like, I think I'm just going to be a general studies major. And he was like, no. Like, let's pick something. And finally, he was like, why don't you just go to culinary school? You know, like, get your degree still, and let's pick a major. But yeah, he suggested it, and it worked out. He was like, you've always loved to cook. I think I didn't think that that was a career that I could go into. This wasn't that long ago. It was a while ago, I guess. I graduated high school in 1994. And I think even back then, being a chef wasn't what people look at it today.
Right, of course.
You know, there was Yan Can Cook. He's awesome. And The Frugal Gourmet and Julia Child. And people watched food TV, but it wasn't like, oh, you want to be a chef?
Right.
It was like, oh, you want to go be a cook, you know?
It was even hard to even imagine what it would look like today. I mean, there just wasn't that career path.
Oh, for sure. And my first day at culinary school, I walked in and my instructor was like, just so you guys know, you don't graduate and become a chef. And I was like, oh, really? He's like, no, you're going to make salads and you're going to make $7 an hour. And I was like, oh, all right, that sounds fun. I called my dad. I'm like, yeah, thanks for my Michigan education. I'm going to go make salads for $7 an hour.
For you, I mean, but what was the goal? Was the goal, I mean, in the back of your mind, was you like, you know what, I'm going to get this education. I'm going to go through the making salad at $7 an hour, and I'm going to open my own restaurant. Was that the goal, or was that even not even a thought?
It wasn't an absolute, you know, it wasn't like one of those things where I saw a certain time when it was going to happen. I was working at La Tache, which isn't there anymore, up in Andersonville. And this was after working at Spring Restaurant here and and working at Vong when it was around. And one of the other cooks said to me, he was like, you're really good at this. You should just open your own restaurant. I was like in charge of making fish specials. Like Dale Levitsky let me make my own fish specials. And Paul Kahn had come in and eaten one and gotten a second order. And it was the most amazing thing that I ever thought would happen. And I tell Paul that now. And now we're friends and it's kind of funny. Yeah, I was like, oh, that's a good idea. So the next week I quit my job and I just started the pursuit of opening a restaurant. And like almost a year to the date after that is when Scylla opened. So it was just kind of just went for it.
Let's talk about Scylla, because this was before Top Chef. This was you. I mean, this is as bootstrap as it gets. You're opening your restaurant in Bucktown, which was right there at Damon and Armitage. I remember it. It lived right around the corner. But talk about like the what you learned from opening a restaurant at that time, opening Scylla.
Well, I've learned that you're the only one that pronounced the name of the restaurant correctly, so not to name it something like Scylla. it was hard. It was my dad built the host stand. My sister designed like the menus, and my parents like complained about their arthritis while they were like scrubbing the boards. That there were these wooden menus that they like sanded themselves and sent out from Arizona. We, you know, did it ourselves, and it was awesome. But I was answering the phones in the morning and like doing the reservations. I was managing, I was expediting, I was working a station, just doing everything, which I think was a great learning experience. I even had this whole like filing system that I was so proud of for paying my bills. Never paid a single late bill. So I learned how to do everything in the restaurant business, but I wasn't learning how to do it better, and I wasn't actually making any money. I probably made like a dollar. I don't even think I made a dollar profit, but.
And that's very, very common when it comes to a lot of great restaurants that we know in the city. And we say, this is what a successful restaurant, that the restaurateur and the chef, they're not getting paid.
No, I mean, for me at the time, it was, I gave myself enough money to pay my rent so that I, you know, had a place to live. It's tricky when you look at the numbers, when you break down a restaurant and you actually analyze the, which I get to go to P&L meetings once a month, which are super fun, and look at like all the costs. But when you break it down, there's so little profit made in restaurants that every little penny really does count. And so I think when you open a restaurant and you don't really pay attention to all those little costs, and you're like, yeah, let's repaint that, let's do this, let's do that, which I always want to do. And my now partners, who are much smarter than me at that, have pointed out, well, let's really think about these things and really think, you know, if you think about how many meals need to be sold to pay for something, you're like,
right,
oh, okay, so 20 customers have to come in so that I can get like those new menus printed or whatever it is.
For all the lessons that you learned, what was the biggest one at Scylla when it closed and you were done with it, that you keep, that stays with you, with Girl and the Goat, with Lil Goat, with Duck Duck Goat? What are some of the things you learned from the restaurant or running a restaurant from that experience?
I think just learning how to delegate. Right before we closed Scylla, or when I finally put it on sale, I had tried to put it on sale like 3 or 4 times. It was like, I would call my real estate agents and be like, put it on sale. And then I'd get a review saying those scallops were great. And I'd be like, all right, never mind. They like my scallops. And finally, there was one day where I was answering the phones and I actually fainted like 3 times in a row while trying to call the reservations. It was really crazy. These poor people who were on the other end of the telephone, I called them back. I'm like, sorry, I was just confirming your reservation, but I fainted. And it happened twice with the same person.
Wow.
But it was that day that I like had to go to the hospital and like have, you know, one of my servers come in and took me to the hospital. And I was like, all right, I'm just exhausted and I really need to start delegating responsibility a little bit. You have to surround yourself with people that you trust to do things, and you can't just do it all yourself.
Stephanie Izard in studio. She's a chef at Girl and the Goat, Little Goat, just this year, Duck Duck Goat. She's also just created the first annual Fulton Market Harvest Fest, which will be on October 2nd in Fulton Market. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. Love to talk to you about I'm interested in where you see yourself going with the restaurants. I mean, obviously, just opened Duck Duck Goat, and you already gave away that you're emailing for more ideas. But also talk about, you know, just your philosophy when it comes to running a business in food and why you stay here in Chicago. Stephanie Izard, my guest tonight at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the Big Table, Stephanie Izard, the top chef. I would just say top chef overall. Just call you top chef.
Thanks.
It's hard to believe that it's been, what, 8 years?
10 years.
I'm
40 this year. Yeah, I was 30 when I got
10
off the show.
10 years.
Yep.
I mean, do you think, it's amazing because that experience was, I mean, not only was it great, obviously, for you and your career, but it really was at a perfect moment because that's really when the culinary arts exploded. Mm-hmm. That's when, even a little bit before that, but right around that time, Top Chef really captured that and you were the star. How does it feel looking back 10 years?
10 years. I think it's amazing the longevity of that, you know, I still go to events and amazing to see just fans are like, hey, I loved Scylla or I love your restaurants. But when they're like, oh, Top Chef season 4 is my favorite. And I just realized, because my birthday's coming up, I was like, 10 years. That's crazy. Like, that was so long ago. And I watched myself like, and I try not to watch myself in the old episodes too much, but I've caught, you know, a glimpse. I'm like, wow, okay, yeah, I really did look 10 years ago. That's okay.
Well, I mean, what do you take from that experience? I mean, obviously it was game show, reality show kind of thing, and it was amazing for you in your start. But what did that do for you to be able to be where you're at today?
I think, you know, it puts you in front of a different audience. You know, you can be, I think Scylla was great and we had a great following, and I could have just probably, you know, who knows what would have happened if I just kept on that path and didn't end up on Top Chef. But it puts you in front of a national audience. And it also just gives you, I think, a different vote of confidence. I think I was a much shyer sort of, I wasn't like a strange like introvert or something before, but I definitely was a little bit shyer, not as comfortable just going out and doing a lot of the things I do now before going on Top Chef. And that's become a big part of my career, is going to food festivals, doing demos, hanging out with you on the radio.
Did you have to train yourself that way? I mean, is it something that you learned from doing Top Chef and you're like, I can do this? Or was it something where you were like, okay, I really got to force myself after Top Chef to continue this?
No, I think it just kind of comes naturally because you end up, you're on this TV show where you're just naturally in front of all these people, even though you don't realize it at the time. But then when you're walking around after being on TV and people are like, oh, hey, you're that chick from Top Chef. You're like, oh, okay, there's like people looking at me. So I think it just kind of throws you into it. And, you know, someone asks you to do a demo and you better just, you know, try to be entertaining or something. So I think it just, you know, it might not come. I think a lot of chefs are in the kitchen and so they're not quite as comfortable. But having that opportunity to go on TV and do a lot of different things outside of the kitchen just made me more comfortable.
Well, I wouldn't say you're the first, but you definitely hit that the height of the celebrity chef. You know, the idea of Grill and the Goat opening up, it was as much of an experience to come watch the winner of Top Chef in your environment as much as going to a hot new restaurant. I mean, there's something about that. I mean, as a chef, is that difficult? Is it challenging to be the center of attention because people want to come there and take your picture as opposed to eat your food? They want to do both.
I think it was interesting. I think we purposely made a kitchen that was open so that I could do both. Especially back when we first opened, I, of course, was expediting. I worked from like 6 a.m. until close every day. And then I drank too. I don't know how I pulled that all together. But I would hang out and take pictures all night long. And so even now when I go expedite, and I'll only do it, you know, I'm not going to lie and pretend I work as late of hours as I did. You know, I have a baby and I have three restaurants. But I will go expedite for a few hours and I am holding tickets in my hand and I'm turning around and taking pictures and just, you know, thinking like, all right, there's this extra challenge of trying to get the food out on time while taking pictures.
Right. That's amazing.
But it's
yeah.
fun. I think it's great. I think it gives me a reason to, you know, meet the guests. I much prefer the guests to come up and just say hey while I'm expediting as opposed to just, I don't like to mill around the dining room and just assume people want to say hi. I'd rather them come up and just say hey and take a picture and they can like check out the action in the kitchen. It's fun.
It is. I mean, it's being some, I've been to the restaurants, I've been to the, you know, seen you in action. And there is something about this sort of, you know, you and Rick Bayless and, you know, Paul Kahn. And there is this element now that is sort of become a reality in food that wasn't there before. And it is something that I think that people seek out certain opportunities for that, or yeah. at least the experience.
It's straight. I mean, it's funny. Sometimes people come in and when I am working, they're like, oh, you like actually work here? And I'm like, yes, yes, I do. I do work at my restaurants. Because I think the chefs that have been on TV, like don't actually work in their restaurants. And I think, you know, a large percentage do, maybe not, you know, to the, not, you know, 20 hours a day anymore, but that's the only way to keep your restaurant exactly as you want it to be, is to make sure you know, are there sometimes at least.
But I mean, you mentioned, I mean, it's a tough lifestyle. And we've had a lot of chefs on the show and talked about the idea, especially when you're coming up a 6 a.m. to close, you know, 2 a.m., those kind of things. I mean, that's the reality for a lot of chefs. I mean, when you were doing those things, you even mentioned, you know, at Scylla having fainting spells. I mean, how do you manage to be able to pull off a day like that?
I think I had a lot of adrenaline going through me when Grill and the Goat opened. I look back and I don't think I could pull that off now. I mean, there was nights where I like slept back and I wore chef coats. I slept in the office in my chef coat and I would just kind of stay there. I mean, you know, have a couple like old fashions, go sleep in the office and wake up and like ready to make some specials and get the day started. I'm just still wearing my outfit from the night before. There was actually one night I slept in my partner's like his apartment's in his baby's room in my chef clothes. I woke up the night because he was like a block away. I was like, can I just sleep at your house? Because I just really need to get some sleep. Woke up in like a tiny little like princess bed. And I was like, what's going on? Okay, time to go back to work. Probably shouldn't tell.
I'm a celebrity chef.
Yeah. But it was an interesting, you know, when Grill and the Goat opened, it was just this huge adrenaline rush. I had been trying to get the restaurant open for a long time. The restaurant was crazy. Every day was this like huge, just like, oh my goodness. Like, what did we get ourselves into? Like, it's amazing, but just way beyond the expectations that I had never worked in a restaurant that did more than like 200 people a day. I didn't, you know what to expect. So yeah, I think that's just what keeps you going.
Is there a certain temperament that's needed for that kind of job? And you think that you have it? I mean, it's this sort of almost addiction to the rush. I mean, this adrenaline rush that you have to almost get to be able to pull off the insane amount of hours that you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some sort of addiction. You know, I was mentioning to you already like having ideas of what you want to do next and like how is that even possible. I just got over opening DuckDuckGo and having those, you have those moments of saying to yourself, dang, I told myself I would never do this again, when you're going through like the hardest part. But the excitement of you know, getting a new concept going and just all the stress that goes with it and just the day-to-day of restaurants. I think, chefs must thrive on this bit of stress and there must be something I love about it because I still
continue to do it,
day.
Right.
Still there every day.
Well, you mentioned the hardest part. What is the hardest part when you're starting a restaurant, when you're starting Duck Duck Goat and you've been through it before? We've talked throughout this interview about opening at Scylla, idea of Girl and the Goat. So what is it? I mean, what's the hardest part about opening a restaurant?
I mean, I think it's changed over the years. You know, when I was opening Girl and the Goat, the hardest part was figuring out, you know, what was the concept going to be? I don't think we had the menu figured out until a couple days before we opened.
Really?
And everything. Yeah.
That's interesting to me. I mean, it's obviously an evolving process, the menu. I mean, for you, when you're opening a restaurant, how much of it is tasting it and being like, this ain't right. We got to change this. This is not the right dish to complement this dish.
Well, ours was more, we were supposed to open in the spring and we didn't open until late summer. So we had trained the whole staff and we're like, oh, we got these great English peas that we're going to have, which ended up turning into the green beans, which worked out really well because it's one of our most known dishes. But we just kept having to change our mind because of the seasons, because we wanted to be very, you know, farm driven. And I'm just kind of a procrastinator. So honestly, like the menu, I'm not one of the type of people that had the whole menu planned out while we were making the concept of the restaurant. So it wasn't, some people were like, I wrote my business plan, I wrote the menu. I'm like, what do you mean you wrote a menu? How do you even possibly do that already? So I've always been a bit of a last minute.
I feel like that's the beauty of this, the big table, is you stretch out. What I've learned about Stephanie tonight is that you're a procrastinator. You're addicted to the rush. So that's got to come together in some way that you're like, and that you sleep in Princess Beauty beds.
In chef coats.
Chef coats.
Yes.
Stephanie Izhardt is my guest tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up. She's the chef at Girl and the Goat, Little Goat, just this year, Duck Duck Goat. She's also created the Fulton Market Harvest Fest, which I want to talk about, which is coming up on October 2nd at Fulton Market, right where Duck Duck Goat resides. Stephanie Izhardt, my guest at the big table. Stay with us. Chef Stephanie Izhardt, my guest tonight at the big table here on the Download, talking about we're really getting to know Stephanie.
Don't tell them what we talk about when we're not on the radio.
Right. Top Chef winner, James Beard Award winner, Girl and the Goat, Little Goat, Duck Duck Goat. Duck Duck Goat just opened a couple months now, and the takeout window, which was a big story, the idea just this week, or last week, right?
Yeah, Duck Duck Tuggo.
Tuggo.
So clever.
So clever. I'm amazed because, you know, we talked about stress. We talked about the idea of schedules, you know, especially when you're starting a restaurant, 6 a.m. to close. And obviously your job has changed with managing three restaurants as opposed to just one. Adding a takeout window and delivery, yeah, it's great on paper, but it's got to add a whole other level of stress to you.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's it always seems so simple to add on. We're like, oh, you know, it's a small menu. At Duck Duck To Go, it's actually a totally different menu. So it's street food, and so it's not stuff that's on the rest of the menu, which there's a couple of crossover, but not really. So it's almost harder because you have this small sort of income. It's not enough to have a separate manager just to manage that, yet you want it to be as great as the rest of the restaurant. So it's kind of just adding on another piece of the puzzle to everyone that's running the rest of the restaurant. So, hey, managers that work all these hours, come in, manage the window too. And it's working out because our staff is so great and wants to, you know, make sure it's awesome. But it's things you don't think about at the time. So I've been frying chicken and eating it. And I'm loving my mornings now.
All right. So what's interesting too is because they're Girl and the Goat, Little Goat, there's really not, you can't go in and carry out. There's no delivery. And a lot of chefs, you know, have had this tussle with online delivery system. We were talking on the show not too long ago about the idea that a lot of places are saying, I don't want to do that because I lose control of my food. I lose control of what happens on the back end. Do you have the same similar kind of thoughts about that?
We, to test it out, we basically made food, let it sit for 20 minutes, then we kind of walked around and shook it around a little bit because you know that it's going to get shaken around a bit. But there's no way to control it. Last night we were talking about it after some fumbles with our first attempt, and I was envisioning, you know, I'm going to go get a bike and just ride this around the neighborhood and just bring it to places myself. But, you know, we're kind of testing the waters and checking out different systems.
This is for delivery, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the best thing, we need to just find some different places, test it out, and just order it to ourselves and see what happens when it gets there. Because otherwise, how do you have any idea?
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Because you have to, I mean, a lot of chefs, they don't want to let go of that experience, the way it's plated, the way it comes out, the time that it's supposed to be done. And that is all up in the air when you use services and delivery and all the kind of stuff that can happen.
Yeah, you have to pick the right food that's going to do it. And you definitely need to test it out. I would never do plated dishes from the Girl and the Goat. You're never going to see Girl and the Goat suddenly on delivery. Unless we're really hard up in 5 more years. We'll see what happens. But
Hey, can I get the pig face? Can I get 2 pig faces? Cool.
That egg's going to look really good. That pig face is going to look really delicious by the time it gets to you. Those crispy potatoes will be super crispy. You really have to think about how is it going to travel. And I think some places probably, you know, maybe it doesn't really matter to them. But to us, we want it to get there and still taste great. So,
for you, I mean, it's so interesting because with 3 restaurants, you've also been a trendsetter when it comes to the food that you offer at these restaurants. And, you know, we kind of talked at the beginning just about the origin stories of Girl and the Goat and Little Goat. But Little Goat's an upscale diner. Girl and the Goat uses all sorts of cuts of meat. And I kind of made the joke right there, pig face. And people are like, what? No, that's that is a major dish at your restaurant. And then Chinese food, and the street food for takeout. I mean, there's such a variety there. Would it be easier to have a little bit more of this is what Stephanie does and you can get it in 3 different places as opposed to the variety? Or does the variety help not only with, you know, the brand of the goat, but also with that rush we're talking about, that idea that you're creating all this food?
I think it just drives the excitement about it. You know, with Duck Duck Goat, we did a dinner at Little Goat in our private dining room, a Sunday supper. We made Chinese food and we're like, this is super fun. Let's go to China. Let's open a Chinese restaurant. So it was just the challenge of going to China, going to Taiwan. Nobody there is going to teach me how to make noodles. Let's watch some videos and learn. You know, just kind of figuring it out and challenging myself to something new. And it also gives everybody, we have this huge team that I think we have over 300 employees now at the 3 restaurants. And it gives people a chance to maybe check out one of the other restaurants and they can move to another one, and just gives like growth for everyone. So I think that's a huge part of it too.
You've changed your schedule, fed a baby. You have gotten out of the 2 o'clock in the morning drinking, coming back at 6 o'clock. Is it still a rush to you? I mean, is it the idea of opening these places, the festival that you're going to have in October? I mean, do you find different ways to find that rush?
Yeah, I think it's a rush / stress at the same time. I mean, that walk from Girl and the Goat to Duck Duck Goat every day gives me a little bit too much time to think about. Like, I'm like, just today I was like, what was I thinking with this festival? Like, I'm so excited about it. It's going to be amazing. But when you're like, oh, got to figure out, I have to get all these chefs together and figure all this stuff out. So I always add more things to my plate probably than, you know, I should. But at the same time, it just keeps me excited. And Ernie's our baby, almost 4 months. He's, you know, obviously the coolest thing that's come into my life ever. And it just adds this whole other, you know, element. But I'm excited for him to kind of be part of this world. And he comes to all the restaurants and everybody loves seeing him and they pass him around at pre-shift. It's awesome.
There's some amazing thing about working in a restaurant. I mean, there's obviously the stress and everything goes in, but there's camaraderie. I mean, there's shorthand and it's almost like playing on a sports team in the way that, you know, you develop these relationships for life. Talk about that. What is it about working in a restaurant that keeps you there? Why stay in restaurants? Why not work somewhere else, get into a different business, maybe try to, you know, take on the general studies stuff at University of Michigan? But what is it about that camaraderie that keeps you going?
There's just some, I mean, people that work in restaurants are just the perfect amount of crazy that it's a fun group to be with. And I think you spend so many hours together. Our cooks, I was at, I don't remember where I was at. I ended up at Haymarket. I took all my managers out and I ended up at Haymarket kind of late night for the latest I've been out in a while. And all of my cooks from like, and staff members from all 3 restaurants were there just taking over the bar and just hanging out. Not in a way like, hey, they're all crazy, but just hang out and like enjoying each other's company, and they're each other's like great friends. And we just had a big staff party on Monday just to celebrate the restaurants. And it's really cool to see. They like love hanging out with each other and they become these units and they're like our little family.
Chicago, you have set up shop here. You set up shop in the West Loop. What is it about this town that keeps you here? And what is it about this town that makes it unique or separates it from the other major markets?
I mean, it's the people, you know, not to say that in a, hey, everybody should come to our restaurant because I love my customer. You know, it just is true. I think people in Chicago love our restaurant scene and are excited to see it growing. They're excited to try new foods there. I think all the chefs in Chicago see our city as, you know, it's not like what's better, New York or LA or New York or San Francisco like it used to be. Now it's like what's better, you know, Chicago. It's a great restaurant scene and it's great to be part of. And there's so many new restaurants opening all the time. I can't even keep up, but it's so cool to be a part of. And all the chefs just want the city to be the best. And so I think we, of course, there's friendly competition, but we all support each other and just support the restaurant scene. So it's
cool. I hear that all the time about this in the industry here, that it's competitive, but at the same time, it's friendly. For you personally, what keeps you in this city, in Chicago? I mean, obviously your business is here, the restaurants, but what is it about this place, this city that we live in that keeps Stephanie Izard here?
I feel like I'm home. I think you find a city. I was born here. I was born in Evanston, but I lived in Connecticut. I went to Michigan. I lived in Arizona, and I never just really felt like it was where I was supposed to be. And here it's just, I don't know, you feel like it's your people. You just fit in.
You fit in. The Fulton Market Harvest Fest will be, I mean, it's like a fest where you're going to have samples from the different restaurants up and down Fulton Market. Fulton Market, I mean, we could do another hour on how that has changed just in the last 2 years. It's amazing to think about. The Fulton Market Harvest Fest will be on October 2nd at Fulton Market. You can find it at fultonmarketharvestfest.com, right?
Yeah.
And that will obviously, that'll be a you yeah. and other chefs from Fulton
yeah,
Market?
Yeah, myself. All the restaurants in the area right now, we really want to celebrate how much the neighborhood has changed. And Paul Kahn and I kind of got together and started talking about it. And it's kind of a cross-train street festival. And Food and Wine is a media partner with us for it. So Food and Wine thing. And we've got a KitchenAid stage. So there'll be chef demos. There's going to be bands, J.C. Brooks. So it's kind of a combination of all the things that are fun, food, beer, wine, drinks, music. And it's going to be a beautiful day on October 2nd. I'm planning on it.
You've already got it figured out. Stephanie Izard, Top Chef, Chicago great, Girl and the Goat, Little Goat, Duck, Duck, Goat. Stephanie, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us tonight.
Thanks for hanging out.
Stephanie Izard, how about that? She was great.
I'm hungry.
Oh, man. Some of the greatest restaurants in Chicago.
She's got some really good restaurants, man. I mean,
she really does.
Really good.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, I mean, she's got the story to back it up, too. I mean, that's a lot of restaurants to open up at one time, and I have a feeling that's not the end of it.
Well, you know what? And I like her comments about the delegation part because, you know, these chefs are creative. They're control freaks, and I think most of them know that. And then she said, you know, I just had to relinquish some of the control.
Yeah, right. At a certain point, you have to mature enough to be able to say, you know what? I got great sous chefs. I got great people around me, especially when you got three restaurants. And the other thing, she's got to jump, and we didn't really talk about it. She probably has to jump from restaurant to restaurant to restaurant to make that celebrity appearance because people are coming to see her in a way. And if she's not there, so she has to make the rounds so people see her. Just a little extra added stress, especially when it gets cold outside.
Yeah, no pressure there.
No pressure.